Welcome to Back to the Sources, a podcast for those looking for a window into the life of Concordia Seminary and our library, whether you are a theologian, pastor, or prospective student. Each episode explores deep theological questions, profound insights, and topics of interest, brought to you by both professors and students alike. We hope that these conversations enrich your faith, academic, and professional development by connecting you to our rich resources. Back to the Sources is brought to you by the Hasse Library on the campus of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. The Hasse Library, inspiring theological discovery.
Hello, and thank you for joining us here at Concordia Seminary. I am Aiden Moon. I'm joined by Adam Flanick. We are here to talk about the topic of biblical lament, and specifically how biblical lament can be used in trauma-informed care as we go into our ministries and our communities, as we see all the different people who are hurting and dealing with suffering all around us, how we can make use of the scriptures and specifically the concept of lament in the scriptures as we go into those contexts.
I think I like how you put that, Aiden, to make use of lament. So often when we read the Psalms, particularly the lament Psalms, people are left wondering, what in the world is this saying? And why would I ever read this or use this? In some ways, it can feel foreign and alien. Luther has this quote. I love this. He says, "Where do you find more miserable, more wretched, more depressing words than in the Psalms of lamentation? There you see into the heart of all the saints, as into death, even as into hell. How sad and dark it is there in every wretched corner of the wrath of God."
Well, it's amazing, as you say that, it's amazing how much of the Psalter actually is made up of laments. Because it's, like you said, we got some words like miserable, wretched, depressing. These aren't usually words that we use in church, actually. Other than maybe I'm a poor, miserable sinner. We don't spend a whole lot of time. That's about the extent. We don't spend a whole lot of time with these negative emotions. And that's really what lament has to do with. Lament has to do with the negative emotions that come from suffering. And it's the emotions that are responding to suffering. And depending on how you're defining lament, this can make up to or over a third of the Psalms. Mm. So as you're reading through the Psalms, you can recognize this and see there's some kind of appeal being made to God. There's a wrestling with suffering. And really, we see this isn't a sort of strange thing. It's actually part of being human. It's part of being a creature, someone who's made by God, that we wrestle with what's wrong with the world, so to
speak.
Yeah,
and I think that's an important distinction. Lament is not by nature, lament is part of life, not by nature of being human in creation, but by being a broken human in a broken creation that is marred by sin.
And so as we're dealing with all of those consequences of sin in the world, there's a temptation, and this is a really basic temptation that many, many Christians fall into, that is to explain away suffering somehow. And what we're hoping to do a little bit today with digging into this idea of lament and the lament Psalms and how we might use them is to help us realize that there might be a bigger picture, not just finding a neat, tidy explanation that helps us kind of get rid of the problem, but actually kind of living in it and seeing it and being honest about it. There's really a lot in lament that is really about being honest. And so it's not just this sort of, not just this thing about suffering kind of in a off, strange, psychological way. This isn't just purely a human thing, but it's also actually a pretty deeply theological topic. It's also about God and how God interacts with us and concepts of divine justice and all of these different things. So there's like a lot of layers to how we think about lament, and it can be tempting maybe to narrow it down to like, this is just sort of about bad feelings, but it's not just that. There's also these very specific claims being made, questions being asked. We're making a claim on God even sometimes, saying, hey, what's going on with this? We're your chosen people, and yet we're dealing with this suffering, this pain, this evil, and putting that on God. And what might seem weird to you, so you're reading through these, maybe they're a little uncomfortable, maybe you really like the lament, so we won't assume where you're at, but many people are uncomfortable with lament. So I'd like to make the claim that lament is actually something that comes from a place of faith. Dr. Eric Herman, in a sermon on the concept of lament, kind of said it in these this way. He said that it is actually born from faith, that lament is sacrificing your self-sufficiency and turning to God. It's not antithetical to faith. We sometimes think that it is, but it's not. And so we're going to see how this is actually really central to being a human in a broken world, and especially being a Christian who trusts God, believes that God is working things for good, and yet the world doesn't look that way. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer is another resource that we can think about this. He says that the Psalms of Lament allow suffering to stand as a threat to faith. That's kind of crazy. This is in the Bible. They allow them to stand as a threat. They don't just sort of explain them away. And then he also talks about how the fact that we don't lament individually. The Psalms are intended in a large degree to be used communally in the life of worship. And I'll come back to that later when we start talking about some applications.
And notice how in what you're saying here, it gives us a place and a space and a community within which we can actually be honest about the brokenness that we experience living in a sinful world. We don't have to pretend that it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
We don't have to pretend that it doesn't bother us,
yep.
But we can actually be brutally honest, even to the face of God, about the problems of our world.
And so as we're dealing with lament and reading through Psalms of Lament, you're going to see those things like struggle and anxiety and doubt and fear. And I want to really, really make a point of this, and we'll come back to it again later on in the podcast, but the idea of lament is not about sort of resigning ourselves. It's not sort of stoicism, like this is just the way it is. The Christian response is different because it actually, with a heart of faith, goes after God's promises, and God's promises are going to center in Christ. So the goal and end of the lament psalms are going to lead us to Christ. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Aidan, you touched on a little bit of lament itself. Can you press us into a little bit more clearly the causes of lament?
Yes, absolutely. So lament is going to come from, broadly speaking, suffering. So that's the most kind of broad brush word we're going to use to say where lament comes from. But lament could also, we could see this as coming from the effects of sin in the world, might be a different and maybe a more theological way to describe it. And so that's very broad. I'll admit that's a very broad way to define it. But what that's going to do for us is allow to see that lament could be, for example, could it almost include repentance? So we could say, I see sin in myself and that makes me sad. What does that cause? That causes repentance. But there's also an aspect of sadness. And why is this way? I'm asking some of those questions. We see the effects of other sin on us. That would be a cause of lament. We see injustice in the world. We see the world kind of falling apart at the seams. We see darkness. We see natural disasters. I mean, we're dealing with, in the news as we're recording this, hurricane. We have that floating around in our kind of consciousness as we're thinking as a society.
Yeah.
Those kind of things are beyond any human control, but they're still a sign that something is not quite right. They cause suffering. And so we see all of these things together as bound up in the lament and in the concept of lament, and it shows up throughout the scriptures, including in the Psalms. And so for the purposes of our topic today, we're digging into the concept of trauma. And trauma is a word that stems from some of those same things, in that it has a more narrow definition according to the DSM-5 in the psychological world. But some have broadened the definition of trauma to really just be the effects of wrongdoing on a person. So the effects of wrongdoing. So we can think of this. I mean, abuse is probably one of the most obvious examples of this, of any kind. There's this effect of wrongdoing, but we can see this in other ways too. If a parent hurts their child, that's pretty obvious. But if a parent hurts their spouse and their child is there, that's also a traumatizing thing. If someone lives through an ordeal of some kind, like being in the midst of a natural disaster, that's going to cause trauma. And then there's like effects that has on the human brain. So there's a lot of research on that psychologically. But we also have we also have this aspect of it's not non-theological, because all of this is coming from that same source, is coming from the result of sin in the world. And so my personal experience, and this is one of the things I'm bringing to this concept of lament, is that I actually worked in a spiritual care setting. I was working in a treatment facility over my vicarage. It was a good chunk of my vicarage work. And I was working with teenagers who had experienced severe trauma, most of them in more than one way. There was a lot of different things that they were dealing with and things that they were in treatment for, but trauma was a pretty consistent theme throughout. Traumatized by things that had happened to them, by family situations, by situations that happened because of addiction. There's just all these kind of different layers. And so we came to that with kind of a specific way of thinking about how do we help them grow? How do we help them function with this in their background, with this as part of their story? And one of the things that happens to people who are traumatized is that they have these kind of learned behaviors that they act out in different ways. And so for some kids, it's like a total release and shutdown. For some people, it's more of like an attack response. And so as we helped to guide, and I in my small way, because I was working with some really well-trained folks who knew a lot more of the psychological side of things, one of the things we were working with, and this is from more of the first article world of thinking about the human brain, is that, and some of this is from a book called Changeable, so you can learn more there. But a really surface level understanding of this is thinking that being able to like live as a normal functional human is a learned skill. Mm. So it's not something that just automatically happens. It's something we have to learn how to do. And so a theory of change in that mindset of how do we grow beyond the kind of instantaneous reactions of like anger or fear is that you have to learn how to do that. You have to learn specific skills. So it's not just that these kids are just making a choice to be bad today. There's some sort of deficiency of skill. And so this might seem unrelated to lament, but I actually found it directly connected to lament, because lament was actually a skill. It was a skill
That's
I could
great
teach.
Point.
Lament was something that I could teach them how to do, and it gave them a way to react to things in their life that were painful, that were traumatic, that made them angry, scared, sad. And so we did this in the context of liturgy, which I'll talk about later. But that's the experience that I'm bringing to this. And I think that it's helpful for us then to think about lament as actually something that's formational. When we use, so to speak, lament in ministry, we can actually use it to form people, form how they think and how they react. So they actually have a skill. So when even if they've had a perfectly charmed life and they don't have anything bad happen, when inevitably the effects of sin hit them, they've learned with the community of faith how to react to that, how to respond. How do Christians deal with suffering in the world? And this is a learned skill. It's a way to be faithful, to direct our attention towards God, to leave our self-sufficiency. Like I said a few moments ago.
And here the psalmist in these laments becomes a teacher for us.
Absolutely. And so we're going to, today for our listeners, we're going to kind of look at two different images of how we might see the psalmist in suffering and see the lament psalms in suffering. And so these two images that we're going to use are as a voice and as a guide. So Adam, why don't you introduce us to that idea of the psalmist as a voice?
Absolutely. So to kind of build off of some of the points you were making, you know, when we're dealing with trauma, when we're dealing with suffering, when we're dealing with the effects of sin, many times for people, they can be dealing with situations that they have never experienced before. We can think of it in terms of they're going through uncharted territory. And as a result, they lack the vocabulary both to describe what they're experiencing, but even at an even deeper level. They lack the vocabulary to describe what they're feeling. The trauma specialist will talk about how many times this sort of suffering can even at a physiological level disrupt the brain, disrupt a person's ability to communicate. Mm. You talked about some of the kids that you dealt with falling into this resignation, not even being able to open up or speak. And so trauma and suffering can lead us to sort of an isolation where we're left alone. But the psalmist as a voice, in a way, gives us language, gives us language to speak that which we do not know, that which we are uncertain of, that which we have never experienced before, and gives voice to our suffering. In a way, you could think of it in three terms. It names both the experience and the emotion. It validates both in that it is speaking from a perspective of an individual who is in suffering or even a community in suffering when we talk about the communal lament psalms. But then it also equips you as an individual suffering or as someone ministering to an individual in suffering. It equips with the vocabulary in order to give voice both to the situation and the emotions.
It gives you a symbolic language, so to speak. And in his article, How Rituals Heal, Herbert Anderson gets at this, and this is a great quote. It's short and sweet and to the point. For unspeakable suffering, we need story and song to give it a voice. Story and song. We often don't know how to do that on our own. We need something outside of ourselves to help voice that. So that's the first of the two images of how we might see the psalmist in suffering as a voice. But the second image is as a guide.
Absolutely. And as a guide, think of this in terms of someone who comes alongside you, takes you by the hand, and leads you where you need to go, but you're uncertain of the way. And so we can think about the psalmist as a guide in three different ways, the first of which is that the psalmist finds us within trauma and suffering. The psalmist finds us within trauma and suffering. And he finds us within trauma and suffering, and he is not just empathetic, but he's actually sympathetic because he is speaking with a voice that comes from a place of suffering. As I mentioned before, you know, suffering and trauma has a way of isolating us. And unless a person experiences that or has experienced that, oftentimes they're left feeling very alone. Mm-hmm. A person might be left feeling unable or unequipped to sympathize with another person.
And there's so many examples of this in our culture right now. And there's many people are saying we live in a culture that is just totally drowning in loneliness. And so it can be a way for us to not just be brought in as individuals, but actually see that, oh, wait, this isn't just me. This is other people. Oh, wait, this isn't just me. This is in the Bible. This is from the scriptures. This is me and the whole human race all together have experienced this as a community, as a whole. There is more than just me in this picture. And that is something that is a huge antidote to loneliness.
Absolutely. So the psalmist begins with this song of lament that brings you into this song and story. But it's important to recognize that even though the psalmist finds us within lament, he doesn't just leave us there. What he actually does, and this is something that might surprise us, because as you mentioned earlier, we like to kind of explain away suffering and trauma. We like to ignore it. What the psalmist will actually do is press us deeper into it and explore every aspect of it, leaving no stone unturned. I mean, think about, you use the metaphor of a wound, or think about the metaphor of a wound for just a moment. We like to kind of pretend that it's not there, cover it up, pretend that it doesn't exist. And what the psalmist does is he kind of exposes it. He gets to the heart of this rottenness, this disease, and he gets at to the heart of this brokenness. And in doing so, he exposes it in order for healing to actually begin. So the psalmist finds us within trauma and suffering. The psalmist pushes us deeper into trauma and suffering. And then finally, the psalmist, as our guide, seeks to lead us out of that trauma and suffering. He seeks to lead us out of that trauma and suffering. This does not mean that somehow in this magical sort of way, we stop experiencing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are still in a broken world. All of us recognize that. But leading us out of that suffering in a way in which we as individuals can lament the situation, lament our feelings, but ultimately be led to a place in which those situations and those feelings are placed in the hands of God.
There's a way in which, well, we as Lutherans like to talk about the idea of the simul justus et peccator, the idea of being both saint and sinner. And I think that this applies to our personal sinfulness for sure. But there's also a way in which there's a similar paradox with how we deal with suffering and lament in the world, that we trust that God is working. We have absolute faith that God is working. But we also recognize that because we are creatures, we don't see the big picture. Another seminarian recently wrote a sermon on the idea of we as Christians live in a confused confidence. And he was getting at that idea that we have this sort of contrast that is really a paradox that needs to be held together, that we're just people. We don't see the big picture. We don't know what God's doing. And it's even the right response to go, God, what are you doing? What's going on? How long? As the psalm says. But also, we trust him. And that's where the Psalms of Lament lead us as they guide us. They lead us to a place of trust. And it's not a place where it's fixed, like you said.
Yeah.
It doesn't fix the problem necessarily. It just reorients us away from our self-sufficiency and towards God. It's this sort of ebb and flow. So we think of like the Christian life as a life of repentance. There's a way in which it's a life of lament too, not in that we're always lamenting, but that as suffering, as trauma, as difficulty come along, we can come back to these and allow them to give voice, allow them to guide us back to faith again and again and again, back to trusting in the God who is continuing to work and we know is continuing to work. Because of what he's promised us in Christ, we can return again to the suffering of Christ on the cross and know that we are in good company. We are with him. And ultimately, he is the one who gave voice to that himself on the cross. So this the Psalms of Lament can be actually a part of our cycle of life as individuals and as a community.
Almost in a way, teaching us to be creatures.
Yeah.
Creatures created by God, living out in a broken world where we weep and we lament, where we hear Jesus's words, blessed are those who weep, for they will be comforted, and we get a taste of that comforting.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. So on my vicarage, I had opportunity, like I said earlier, to work in the context of those who'd experienced trauma, and I actually used lament concretely. And so as sort of a case study, I'll use my experience. I had the opportunity and the privilege to lead chapel every week, and that was a really cool thing. It was one of my favorite things. It was on Thursday afternoon, and so it was the last thing before my day off on Friday. So I always got to end my week with that, and I really loved it. I loved those kids. And it was really great to work with them and worship with them.
I know you can't go into details, and a lot of that is confidential, but tell us a little bit about the backgrounds of these kids that you were dealing with. What sort of trauma and suffering were they facing that made these Psalms of Lament so helpful?
Well, like you said, there's a lot of individual confidentiality kind of things, but on a broad brush, kind of big picture, we were it's a pretty intense treatment facility. It was a little bit smaller, so we only had up to 16 kids at a time. Usually it was a little bit less than that. And it was all kinds of things. There was issues of suicidal ideation and coming from a variety of different sources, issues of addiction. And those were two pretty big ones. But then also a variety of maybe what we might consider smaller things, but that then had big consequences for people. And so it was some kind of acting out in their life had prompted them to end up in this context, whether they were going through the foster care system or whether their parents didn't know what to do. They had these behaviors that the parents couldn't deal with. And so they were in this context to receive some help and to be treated in for these various things. But it was a lot of different perspectives. So I went in with kind of one job. And my job was the spiritual care side. And I did have the privilege of working with people who really had been trained, like I said, that sort of theory of change, of the building skills to respond to things in life. And so in my small part of that, we did chapel every week. And what I did with this chapel service is I realized that there was a necessity to specifically for this community where it's pretty obvious that everyone here is suffering. Everybody knows it. There's nothing hidden. This is one of the things you don't get in a congregation. In a congregation, people are a little bit more likely to play their cards close to their chest. They might have a lot going on, but it's not going to just come out. There wasn't any of this. If you're in treatment, you kind of know that you and everybody else there doesn't really want to be there. There's probably a bad reason.
Absolutely.
And so that sort of bluntness allows for something, and it allowed me to be much more blunt about some of this stuff, to go, you know, this is not fun.
Yeah.
We don't enjoy this. You're dealing with things that are causing you suffering. I can name some of those things. So I figured that out very quickly. But then I started to integrate a ritual liturgical practice of lament into the service. And I did this as integrated into part of the service of prayer. And it was, so it's part of the second part of our service. We kind of followed a sort of prayer and preaching order.
Okay.
And part of our service of prayer, we would read, we did two different things. One is we read a lament responsively weekly. And I would introduce that with some of the stuff we've talked about today. This is a way for us to reorient ourselves toward God, for us to put our suffering in the right hands. Something I would often say is that we deal with anger, pain, suffering, sadness in all kinds of ways that are harmful to our neighbor, that are wrong in God's eyes. But God actually wants us to give those to Him. He can take it. He can take our anger and our anxiety and our sadness. He is perfectly capable of that, and actually it's the right place to put it. And so that's how I would introduce this.
And how did the kids respond to that?
Their response to it was, they were very raw about this. And this is one of the things that I wanted to be always careful about serving in that setting, is allowing them to participate or as much or as little as they were comfortable with, because you don't even need to be the one saying the words.
Mm.
To benefit from this.
100%.
But I would, in a lot of ways, then prompt this into just this responsive reading where we would actually say these words together. We often used Psalm 13. That was a pretty common one for us to use. So they've got pretty familiar with that psalm. And then also another practice I did, and I had a musical rendition of Psalm 10 that I would play and give them some time for just reflection. And I would give them a chance to actually anonymously write down their own laments. And so they had this sort of twofold thing of giving the way of saying the psalm is giving us language, like we talked about, but then also with that language in their mind, what are the actual concrete things that they're thinking about that are causing them to be angry and sad? And so I was doing two things. I'm giving them language. I'm allowing for the psalm to do what we said, to give them a voice. And then also this guide brought us to the prayers of the church. Mm. Brought us to our communal prayers as a community for the things we needed. So we were guided to a place of trust where then we could jump into asking God for what we need, asking God for the good of the world, praying to Him in intercession, those kind of things as well, before we went out with a blessing. And so we were doing kind of both of those things in a language-forming way with the liturgy of reading responsively, and then also in a more subjective way in them actually practicing writing these things down and allowing them to be brutally raw. And then leave them at the foot of the cross.
Absolutely.
And they would leave them behind when they left chapel. And from a psychological perspective, this is building a skill, actually. It's giving them something to do when these feelings take hold, when they're suffering, when they're angry, and actually to direct those in the right direction. It might be tempting to aim it at the person next to them. And for them, they didn't have the skills not to sometimes. Their first instinct when they were in a place of pain was to punch the next person.
Yeah.
Which is usually not how a lot of us deal with it. So that seems a little bit out there. But when you think through what some of these kids had been through, it wasn't crazy. They just needed to learn different skills. And so that was one of the kind of things, is that in live action, it was actually working itself out. I could actually see these two, this voice and guide ways of working, playing. And it was very simple. I wasn't doing anything groundbreaking.
Yeah.
It wasn't this sort of huge thing. We were just reading a psalm together and writing on some little post-it notes. Like, it's not anything wild and crazy, but just this sort of framework.
And what I love about your story is you're dealing with people with backgrounds that are completely broken, but if I had to guess, backgrounds that are far different than yours.
Yeah, that's true.
And here you were being able to sympathize at a deeper level with people with a completely alien experience, and yet you were able to walk with them in suffering. And that brings up an important point that it cannot be understated. You know, we read these lament psalms, and sometimes our response is, well, that's not me right now. okay, well, it might not be you right now, but it is you as part of the church, as part of the community of God's people who experience joy and experience suffering together. And on the one hand, yes, this does give language to the person actually suffering. It also gives language to the person who is ministering to the person suffering, in which this suffering can be experienced together, in which a person is not left feeling alone, but is given a word, given a voice, and guided in and through this suffering.
Something that I often found myself coming back to as I worked in that context was the simple phrase, this is not how it's supposed to be.
Mm.
And that's really what the laments are about. I mean, it's about this is not how it's supposed to be. And I think that's the proper creaturely approach to all that we see in the world that is not right, that is not God's will. I think we can try to get into the mind of God. We can try to figure out what he's doing. The Psalms invite us not to do that. And there's a quote that I really found powerful by, again, from the same article on ritual by Herbert Anderson, that lament holds pain and hope in a respectful tension, that the existing order of things is not the final reality. And this is, again, lament does not solve suffering. It doesn't fix it, but it leads us to a place of trust. And I found myself time and time again pointing to hope. And it's really interesting when you see this play out with real people, that facing honestly that which is wrong with the world is actually what can lead us to really trusting in that ultimate and final eschatological reality that we're looking forward to. We're looking forward to the restoration of all things. That is a powerful hope, and lament brings us there as well.
Absolutely. Lament allows us to mourn the way things are, but also to long for the way things will be again in Jesus and his return. When we can deeply look at the reality of things that are, it ultimately pushes us to fix our eyes on Jesus, the one who will return and restore all things. Well, this has been Adam Flanick and Aidan Moon here at Concordia Seminary. We hope you enjoyed this time with us. We hope through this podcast you've seen not only the value of the lament psalms, but a way in which you can use these words of this teacher, of this one who gives us voice and guides us in suffering, to ultimately understand suffering and walk us through a world of brokenness.
If you enjoyed Back to the Sources, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Facebook so that you don't miss a single episode. This podcast is brought to you by the Hasse Library on the campus of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. The Hasse Library, inspiring theological discovery.